do this jam-packed episode today, baby. Hello and welcome back to the Second and Two podcast. I'm your host, TB. I've got my co-host, producer extraordinaire, and all-around great friend, Jody. What up, Joe?
What's good? That's probably the short and sweet one we've had in a minute. Shout out Sabrina Carpenter. But, you know, we're here. It's a late night. It's Saturday night. That's a rare one for us. And we're bringing you the content right before the game. Got to get a quick turnaround, but we'll make it happen.
All right. We're going to wildcat right now. This is an NFL podcast, but it's Saturday night, and the conference championship games just ended. So TB's going to give you his playoff predictions that are supposed to be out tomorrow morning. You may or may not get this podcast before those actually officially released.
Probably just going to take it right now, put the music in, and put it up.
Let's go. So you're going to hear this, folks. All right, here we go. Hang with me. Now, if you're watching the live stream, you're looking at the board back there. I've got it written up there. Jody says you can't really see it anyway, but we're going to walk back there and talk.
I was going to say you should grab your laptop, but the mic's plugged in, huh?
Oh. Hold on. Hold on, folks. You're coming with me. You're coming with me.
There right you here. Go. Hey, Jody, Loki. Yeah, I can see it, but I just want to say you kind of look like Klay Thompson right now.
Klay Thompson. Okay, we'll take a Klay Thompson look. All right, so we're looking at the board right here at number one, Oregon, Big Ten champs. I mean, they dominated for Penn State made it kind of a game, but for the most part, Oregon did what they needed to do. Their defense, we're going to have to see what it looks like in the playoff, but number one, Oregon. Number two, Georgia. What an overtime win in the SEC championship game. I mean, unbelievable.
Oh, they beat Texas?
They did, and it was a great game. Walk-off touchdown with Carson Beck hurt. Now, you know, everyone's saying they got to apply the Florida State rule. Keep them out.
That's what I was about to say.
Quarterback. Ha, ha, ha. Hey, it's still Georgia, fellas, and they're getting in. They won the SEC championship, okay? Number three, Boise State gets the 3 seed because the ACC and the Big 12 champs were so weak this year that they actually get not just a bye, but the 3rd seed.
I said, how are they not number 5?
Who?
Boise.
Because it's the 4 highest ranked conference champions.
Oh, okay.
And they would be right now, my guess is they're going to be the 3rd highest ranked conference champion
I get you.
Yes. Okay. Number 4. This is a controversial one, okay? A lot of people would argue Arizona State here with what they did today. I liked what Arizona State did today. They absolutely blew out
Skibbity. Iowa State. All right, Scataboo.
Scataboo is unreal. Again, they absolutely blew out Iowa State. They did what they needed to do. However, I kind of feel like if you compare schedules, you look at some stuff, you look at where they've been ranked throughout this, the rankings for the most part. I think Clemson gets the nod here and actually gets the last bye as the 4 seed. Okay. It's a little controversial. I could see them going either way. I think it really is a toss up. Clemson does have 3 losses to Arizona State's 2, but Arizona State had a ton of close games against teams that are just not very, you know, they're not very good. And so Arizona State, while they did take care of what they needed to take care of today, I think that Clemson beating SMU was a more impressive win in the conference championship game, especially given the way they did it on a walk-off field goal. That just happened less than 30 minutes ago from the time of our recording here. So I'm going with Clemson, but I could see them putting Arizona State here. One thing I think is certain, I think both teams, I think Boise State, it should be 3rd above both Clemson and Arizona State. And one of them gets the bye, and one of them obviously is in the field here somewhere. But I think I'm going to go Clemson with the bye. Okay. Number 5, I've got Texas. No shame in losing the SEC championship game in overtime to Georgia. It cost them the bye because they're not a conference champion, but I think they should still be the highest at-large bid here. So I would put them at 5. I would expect they're somewhere around four in the actual rankings, but when you actually seed it out, I think they'll be the fifth seed. Number six, I've got Notre Dame, or actually let's go matchups here. So number five, Texas. I have them playing number 12, SMU. SMU lost on a walk-off field goal. They only have two losses, one being to BYU, who's a ranked team, the other being to, obviously, Clemson, who's going to be, like I said, my four seed here as the ACC champion. I don't think you should be penalized for losing in your championship game on a walk-off field goal while Alabama was sitting at home watching their conference championship game with three losses. I'm sorry, but if they don't put SMU in that 12th spot there, I'm going to be upset. I'm just telling you. I think it's a load of crap if Alabama is in over SMU after watching that game. SMU is a playoff team. They've played better than Alabama all season, truthfully. And they don't have a loss on their schedule as bad as Vanderbilt. Enough said. Okay, number six, we're going Notre Dame. Okay, Notre Dame has been strong all year. They have one loss. The one loss was really bad to NIU, but they played all the best teams on their schedule and won. I like where they sit right now. I have them playing number 11, Indiana. Kurt Cignetti's asking why they don't have a home game. Well, you didn't play
a strong enough game.
They lost one game to Ohio State. All right. You didn't play a strong enough schedule, though, and that's why you're at 11 here. I think Arizona State did enough in their conference championship to jump them. So that's why I have Indiana at 11 versus number 6, Notre Dame. That's a in-state little rivalry. Should be fun. I like the matchup. So is Texas SMU, by the way. All right, number 7, Ohio State. Despite the loss to Michigan, despite the loss to Oregon, who is the Big Ten champ, I don't think they fall too far. I think they actually helped themselves because they beat Indiana and Penn State, who are the other two teams that are in this kind of cluster. Because they beat them, I think they stay above them. So number 7, Ohio State versus number 10, Arizona State, who whooped Iowa State's behind today. They showed them who the boss. Camp Scatterboot, that dude is a dude.
His first name is like Camp?
I struggled with – I really kind of thought about putting him at 4. I don't know. It's really close between them and Clemson to me in terms of who you rank higher, who gets that last bye. I think the winner, whoever gets that bye is obviously 4th. The other team I think slides into 10 and plays Ohio State. That's a – big decision by the committee. I mean, because the difference between a bye and having to go to Ohio State in round one is massive. It's a very big decision. I could see them going either way. If you think I'm crazy for having Clemson at 4, I get it.
How you're not calling them the Ohio State.
You're lucky I'm giving them state right now. Lucky I'm not just calling them Ohio because Michigan. Okay, number 8, Penn State versus number 9, Tennessee. Penn State looked good against Oregon in the conference championship. However, the resume doesn't stack up versus Ohio State, Notre Dame, or Texas. That's why I don't think you can rank them higher than those three teams. But then they play number 9, Tennessee. I think they played well enough to stay in front of Tennessee and earn the home game in that matchup. I do think these are 8 and 9 in some way, shape, or form. You could make the argument Tennessee should be 8 and get the home game against 9 Penn State. But I like it 8 at Penn State because, again, I don't want to see the committee – punish teams for losing in a conference championship game while other teams were sitting at home watching.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And I think that's how it finishes up here. So that's my prediction for the college football playoff. Hope you enjoyed that content. Hope I didn't make you throw up with the moving camera there. If you were watching, if you were listening,
it was a cool POV. Just, it was like, we're in your face and then you're like, here's the board. You know what I mean?
I felt like one of those dudes from, like, you know, the dude on NBC who does like the playoffs, and he's like, right here in this matchup, if they lose,
they got 66% the little, they grab the screen,
yeah, and he has the graphic, and he like, yeah. Felt like that for a little bit. So it's kind of cool. Kind of like that guy's job. Okay. So, Jody, any comments on the CFP before we move on to NFL news?
Nah, I don't I'm not a big college football guy. So the fact that I was getting updates from my phone every now and again, oh, crazy, they're like gaming OT for Texas, and then it was like SMU loss in a heartbreaker at the last second. It was like, all right.
I think we know 11 of the playoff teams.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only question is SMU versus Alabama for that 12th spot.
Yeah.
Again, I obviously think SMU is better. And then I think the other major question is Clemson or Arizona State for the bye. I think those are the two big questions. Clemson versus Arizona State for the bye, SMU versus Alabama for the last spot in. And then from there, kind of how you match it up. I don't think they're going to want to do the kind of thing where you see like Indiana versus Ohio State again, right? Yeah. I personally think they'll rig it a little bit so that matchups
you see people
are different. You see different matchups. And I think that's what my rankings reflected. You know, Texas SMU is a great in-state game. Indiana Notre Dame, great in-state game. Obviously Penn State Tennessee feels like a classic, like, you know, Outback Bowl type game. And normally that would be 8 versus 9, would be like that kind of bowl game. Instead, it's a playoff game at Penn State. And then obviously Ohio State, Arizona State could be fun. Scadaboo versus that Ohio State defense would be fun to watch. I think if that's what you ended up with, obviously the for Texas, Notre Dame, Ohio State, and I think Penn State all would be favored to win their matchups. Obviously the best game in that would likely be the Penn State Tennessee game, 8 versus 9.
Yeah.
The other games would figure would be pretty high lines in terms of the heavy favorites. But could be interesting, and we'll see what happens. Committee, do the right thing. Put SMU in over Alabama. If you do that, the rest of it is, we'll see how that, you know, however they sort it, fine. But put SMU in over Alabama is my one thing that will make me mad tomorrow. If that does not happen, I'll be upset with the committee.
You heard the man. May it happen.
Okay. So NFL news. Thomas Brown been promoted to the interim head coach for the Bears. I think
what was he before? Is that the new OC?
Yes. I think when we recorded our last podcast, Eberflus had been fired by that point. So we reported Eberflus was fired. I don't remember if we reported Thomas Brown as the interim. He looks like he's having fun with the media. I'm excited to see him coach. He was a former McVay guy, McVay staffer.
Yeah.
You know, he got a raw deal in Carolina. So I'm excited to see Thomas Brown get this opportunity and see what he does with it. He's done a good job with their offense in his short time as the interim OC. What else we got, Joe?
Our guy, Christian McCaffrey, his leg blew out. As we've seen, his calf looked like it exploded on camera. My dude.
Not good.
They're saying it's a knee injury that he got. So he's out for the year. Tough times over there for the Bay Area. But they picked up a dude, a former Jet. I think his name is Israel Abadaconda or something. I butchered that. But Izzy is what they're calling him for short. Make it easy for everyone. So we'll see how that goes. He was a good-looking dude on Hard Knocks a couple of years back. He looked solid, but never really got playing time behind Breece Hall and was it Michael Carter, I think, was playing at that time, more so than Braylon Allen. So we'll see how it goes over there for him in the Niner organization.
Okay. All right. The Lions, Chiefs, and Bills have all clinched playoff spots, which, speaking of playoff spots, we might as well just go to the current playoffs picture now.
Let's hear it.
We did put records in on the document this week for Jody so that he knows the record.
I don't have to go and guess how many losses they have.
Number one and the bye in the AFC. The Chiefs are 11-1 right now. The two-seeded Bills are 10-2 right now. They would play the 7-seeded Broncos at 8-5. 3-seed Steelers at 9-3 versus the 6-seeded Ravens at 8-5. And then the 4-seeded Texans at 8-5. A lot of 8-5 versus the 5-seeded Chargers.
Doesn't that game happen this week?
At 8-4.
Or last week? I feel like that game's happening. The Texans Chargers.
Texans Chargers?
I'm pretty sure they play. I'm going to be honest. Let me.
No, the Texans are on a bye.
Oh.
The Texans, Ravens, and Broncos are all on byes because they've played 13 games to everyone else's 12.
Mm, Never mind. I guess the last time they played was 2022.
Yeah.
But wait. They might
maybe they play later in the season.
Oh, I guess not. I don't know. I don't know why I thought that a game was happening soon. But oh well.
Okay. All right. We'll let it slide today. In the NFC, the one-seeded Lions are 12-1 on the path to the bye after Thursday night football. Big win over the Packers. The two-seeded Eagles, 10-2 versus the seven-seeded Commanders at 8-5. You've got the three-seed right now, Seahawks, 7-5 versus the six-seeded Packers at 9-4. And then you've got the four-seeded Falcons, 6-6 versus the five-seeded Vikings, 10-2. And guess what game's happening this week?
That one.
That game. Falcons-Vikings. Big game.
Yeah, except that one's in the Skull Land. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't it be in Atlanta.
Kirko Chains. Maybe
Return of the chain.
Uh-huh. So we'll see what happens there. But, I mean, the matchups right now, I think we get some good ones. You get some interdivision stuff. You get some fun quarterback matchups. I mean, the AFC feels like it's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. We're going to talk later about which matchup might be the toughest for each of the contenders in the NFC and AFC. So stay tuned for that coming down the pipe. What we want to do now, before we get to our awards for the week, we're going to do our three-quarter season honors awards, whatever you want to call it, you know, our predictions after three quarters of the year, who's going to win what award, all right? Mm-hmm. So we're going to start with the big one, MVP. Jody, do you have a pick after three quarters of the season for your MVP of the NFL?
My emptiness on this paper means I'm in agreement.
Okay. So
I agree with that.
So we're both in agreement on Josh Allen as the MVP three quarters of the way through the season. The guy's been ridiculous. He's so good that he was able to simultaneously throw himself and catch a touchdown.
Yeah. We'll get into that later.
Yeah, that was fun. I think what he's doing with the Bills right now, no one else is doing or playing at the level that he's playing at. I know people like Saquon in Philly, but truthfully, Philly's had the same record the last few years without Saquon, with much worse backs.
That is very true. I mean, they ran like four backs last year or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So truthfully, I don't think Saquon has the impact on his team that like what Josh Allen has
the individual number.
Right,
yeah, he has the individual number that shows he's doing well, better than most people at his position, but not necessarily the team number, I guess, right? That's what
we're
basically saying.
Yeah. I mean, Saquon's having a great year, and which is why when you flip over to the offensive player of the year, I would give that award to Saquon because I think the season he's having and the numbers he's putting up are incredible. But I don't think he's the most valuable player in the league because I think if you took him out of his team, the Eagles would still be very good. They'd still be able to run the football. And if you took Josh Allen out of the Bills, that team is – I don't even think they're a playoff team, right? And with him, they're 10-2 right now. So,
like if you put Sam Darnold there, I don't think – they're doing the same things. You know what I mean?
No. I mean, I think they'd be okay, right? Yeah. They might be a fringe playoff team with Sam Darnold, but with Allen, they're a Super Bowl contender. I mean, there's levels to stuff. So Jody, you're in agreements on Saquon Barkley as the Opoy.
Yeah. Same answer there.
All right, so now we go to Depoy. Looks like this might be the first time where we're going to disagree. Defensive player of the year. I think the guy who's had just an incredible impact on his team as a free agent signing. He has seven interceptions tied for the league lead. That's Xavier McKinney for the Packers. He's transformed. That defense was awful last year. And signing him and bringing in Jeff Hafley to run their defense has changed the integrity of that defense entirely. Anytime it seems like teams throw at him, and it's pretty rare to say for a safety, but it feels like anytime teams throw at him, it's a negative play for teams. Mm-hmm. He's just incredible in the middle of the field. I think what he's done, it's pretty hard for a safety to win this award. It's not likely, but I want to give this guy some recognition for the season he's having, because he's been incredible and truly changing that Packers defense and what they're able to do schematically, just because of what he's able to do as a middle of the field player. So I'm going with Xavier McKinney. There are certainly a couple other dudes here that you can go with that many people would argue are more deserving, but I think with the turnaround that he's been able to do in Green Bay with what they were defensively last year versus what they are now, it's night and day, and he's a big, big part of that.
That makes sense. I think I probably said this dude at this spot every year for the past, I don't know, 3 years that we've been doing this, but I feel like this year is the first time we've seen him play this long without getting hurt, without missing some time. So I would say he's definitely in the running for sure. I'm going TJ Watt here for Defensive Player of the Year. I couldn't tell you the numbers comparative to the other 2 years, but I do know their record being 9-3, their defense does a lot. Obviously, Russ is playing great this year too, but I don't know. I think just because of the longevity of this season compared to years past where he still has crazy numbers, I think that he could very well be up there in the running.
Yeah, I don't have a complaint with that. He's a dude. No complaints here. I think the other guy that you just got to mention here, neither one of us chose, but we got to mention is Myles Garrett with the season he's having. The Browns are not having a great season, but he is having a great season. So, okay, Coach of the Year. I think the legend of this dude grows year to year.
Yeah,
you could arguably give it to him each and every year. But when I sat back and thought which team has impressed me the most and which coach has had to make the most important decision regarding his team's season, to me, that's Mike Tomlin. Mike T made the call to switch from Justin Fields to Russell Wilson when everyone thought to themselves, the Steelers are 3-1 and Justin Fields is playing well, and why would he do that? And, you know, all that. And it's crazy because he had, you know, he and their offense coordinator, Arthur Smith, had Justin Fields playing well enough that people were really convinced, hey, this Steelers team can win with this kid, and don't switch to Russell Wilson. And truthfully, really, really felt like he made the right call.
Makes perfect sense.
When he made the switch, and they've been better for it. I think, what were they under Justin Fields? They're 3-1, 4-2, something like that.
I think it was 4-2. They lost like one of the early ones, and then a later one where it was they're about to start slipping, and then Russ came in after being
They're now again sitting at 9-3 in prime position with the division. I think they're 5-1 with Russ. So I think it was 4-2 with Justin Fields, 5-1 with Russell Wilson. And but anyway, that was not a popular decision, I think, at the time. And yet it has paid off in a big way, and their ceiling is higher, I think, with Russ playing the way he's playing with that deep ball and Pickens, and it just fits this offense very well. In truth, I don't know if any other head coach has made a decision as impactful on their season as that one. And then it's not just, oh, he hasn't had a losing season. It's also just, hey, man,
that is every huge accomplishment.
You got to strap on the pads and play these dudes every week, and he has his dudes ready to play every week. And truthfully, I did not see anyone in the preseason talking about the Steelers being the division champs or being a Super Bowl contender. And right now, that's what they are. So if you're asking a guy to, you know, perform above expectation, I mean, he's done it. So I would go with Mike Tomlin. I know there's a lot of deserving dudes out there, but I think Mike T's had the best year.
Yeah, well, similar to a team that, you know, wasn't expected to do as well as everyone thought. And we kind of talked about someone already on this team before, but I went with Sean McDermott. I think the Bills, they had a bunch of youth out there in the wide receiver position. And they were looking good towards the end of last year, lost it late in the playoffs. They came back this year. Everyone was like, oh, I said it myself earlier in the year. I thought Josh Allen was going to be throwing a ton of picks. Like, I took that prop. It's biting me in the butt right now. And we just thought that Josh Allen had to go Superman mode in order to win a lot of games. And that's kind of where he starts fumbling the bag. And the Bills have just been balling. Like, we've seen them beat the Chiefs last week or a couple weeks ago. I don't think that was last week. We had them playing the snow game. Like, they're going and doing it week in and week out. They've only lost twice. So I have Sean McDermott here. It's just in a year where everyone thought it was going to be like rebuild mode. They're still performing at a high level. So I think he could be in that running for sure.
Yeah. Don't have complaints with that one either. I'm with you. Offensive rookie of the year. He started hot. It's now been closer. I still think the gap between Jaden Daniels and the other rookies is still more than what people think it is. I really think he's elevated that Commanders offense with his dual threat ability, everything he does. And that's no shade to Bo Nix or Caleb Williams or even Brock Bowers, who is having one of the best rookie tight end seasons we've ever seen a year after we saw that from Sam Laporta. Jaden Daniels, though, I think with what he's done with Commanders, having them at 8-5, they're, you know, still not completely out of it for that division. You know, three games back, five games to go. We'll see if they can close that gap. I think they have one more game against Philly. So we'll see what they do there. But I really think that what he's done for that franchise is impressive. Makes sense. They haven't had this kind of energy since RG3's rookie year. Yeah. And I really... It might be part of this might be I felt that before the season and saw that coming. And so I think seeing that and seeing the early success, I'm rooting for that kid. I'm rooting for that franchise. And I think he's still the offensive rookie of the year, despite the stellar play from those other three names that we mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Right here, I'm kind of hoping it plays out better in the last couple games with the end of the season. I went with Bo Nix. I think that we've seen him flip the switch early on. Like, he's kind of the reverse of Jaden Daniels, right? He had a tough early like 4 weeks where it was like, I don't know. He's doing a bunch of the dumb mistakes. Got the losing streak after we were like clowning Russ. They're like, oh, they couldn't do it with Russ. They got a new quarterback and it still wasn't looking good.
Yeah.
And then now he's flipped the switch, looking a lot better. He's been one of the top like fantasy performers. So I couldn't tell you what those stats come out to be, right? But I don't think he's thrown like two picks in the last, say, six games. And before that, he was throwing like six or something, right? Something ridiculous. I don't know the numbers. I'm just making them up. But I'm pretty sure he's been way better down the stretch. And we could hope that that continues with the last, where are we at? We're at 13, last four games of the season, and maybe he could be in contention with Jaden Daniels, who has the leg up with him literally using his legs. So we'll see how that shapes up down the road. But I think Bo Nix could definitely be one of those two. And Brock Bowers, of course, that we briefly mentioned. We didn't write him down, but
yeah,
he's doing great for the Raiders. Pretty much their only option at this point, putting in all the work.
I also still think Caleb Williams' play has been quite good,
I think, but the difference is the record is
yes,
what it truly comes
yes
down to
that, and that's where Bo Nix and Jaden Daniels are on another tier over Bowers and Williams because of the records of their teams and how important they are to that. So, winning does need to matter here a little bit. So, defensive rookie of the year, I don't think this one, I mean, of all of these to me, this one feels like the most wrapped up, like done deal. Jared Verse, with the rookie season he's had. Now, I think his teammate Braden Fisk might say, "Hey, hold up, you know, I just won defensive rookie of the month." Quinyon Mitchell's had a good year.
I was going to say that would be the argument. Cooper, I would throw in there, but it's a little tougher at the corner position to like
Cooper DeJean. As also, he did not play as much in the early weeks, which hurts him. But since he's been inserted into that like nickel role for the Eagles, their defense completely changed. Like right around week five, when he started really playing,
they flipped
there.
The switch. Yeah.
So I could make an argument for him as well. But the guy who just it feels like is miles above everybody else right now. I mean, he just called game against the Saints. I mean, it feels like he's done that so many times this year with his pressures. And
we got to see if he can get one versus Josh Allen this week. That'll be a huge, huge test right there.
Yeah. Also, just what he did to Jordan Mailata a few weeks ago was insane. So Jared Verse to me is the DPOY or the D-Roy, I should say. like I said, I don't think it's that close with anybody else. This feels like to me the most runaway, easy award to give right now.
Yeah, I agreed with this one. I left it blank. Obviously, I didn't say it out loud that we agreed on this, but I just think like the only other people that are shining right now, like you said, are defensive skill position. So it's a little tougher for them to get the like big name accolades, especially at the end of a game, right? He got a sack a couple weeks ago to seal it. And in terms of like the only way you could do that as a skill position is just get a pick. And like that's tough to do week in, week out. So I think it's easier for the accolades to stack up on the line. And that's why he would be way ahead of everyone else. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. I mean, he's won Armuño's Big Fella Award like two or three times. Here, so, you know, if the voters are looking for some more evidence,
there you go.
Look no farther. Okay. The comeback player of the year. To me, this was the hardest one for me. I spent the most time thinking about like who could this go to?
Yeah.
And it's usually, I mean, it goes to the best story, right? Last year, DeMar Hamlin won it. Everyone, by the way,
he still got it. Critical.
Yeah. Everyone was very critical.
Because
of that.
The fake punt?
No, because he just didn't play as much defensively.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he played more special teams and all that. That guy's playing real reps on their defense this year, and he's playing well. And people owe him an apology for that.
That's because last year
he's never
going to
really play.
This one's him again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, he's really playing right now, and he's playing well for that defense. So I'm just saying, I just want to put that out there. DeMar Hamlin's playing well. Which also, I saw he had odds to win the award again,
really?
And I was like, yes, because I did. I'm not going to lie.
Because last year was the clone. This one's him. Everyone's putting it together.
Come on, man. All right. Letting that, we're not doing that today. We're
in the
conspiracy theory corner. But I did, because I was struggling so much with this one, I did go look up odds just to see what the odds. And he had odds. I mean, they were long.
Yeah, but he had odds.
And I was like, wow. But it's also hard to remember like who's actually eligible for this award, right?
True.
You could give it to something.
Like almost anyone now. Yeah, for real. Like, we had Joe Flacco a couple years ago where he came off his couch. They were like, you know what? He's coming back. You know what I mean? They brought him back to the league. That's something.
So anyway, after looking at everything and thinking about it, I think the best story to me is Sam Darnold and the way he's played in Minnesota after being a guy who has sat on the bench for the last few years. And I think that that is a great story. He had where he has Minnesota at right now at 10-2.
Yeah,
no one expected him to be that guy. Most people probably wouldn't have guessed he would actually be the starter this long because they drafted JJ McCarthy, but JJ got hurt, gave Sam Darnold this opportunity to have the full length of the season to play, and he's played really well. There, like I said, there's a few other names that you kind of look at, but it doesn't feel like anybody stands out. This was one of the harder ones for me. So I thought the best story in my mind was Sam Darnold, the way he's played after being a guy who sat on the bench.
Yeah. For me, my story kind of goes to Russell Wilson, right? He was in Denver, got benched towards the end of the year because they didn't want him to get hurt. He got shipped out to Pittsburgh. He was there, got hurt or was already injured. I couldn't really tell you. Didn't play for the first 4 to 6 weeks that we talked about previously. he still had the A-OK from Mike Tomlin that he was going to get the position when the time was right. Comes in. He's only lost one game since starting. And looking like a whole new dude, where in Denver, it was like he was in panic mode, taking terrible sacks, like couldn't even get out the pocket, really. And so that's where I got my comeback player of the year this year, Russell Wilson, being shipped out on his last win, basically, and putting on a show for the Pittsburgh boys.
Yeah, I don't. I don't know. I kind of like yours better than mine. After hearing you talk about it, I think you're right, but we'll see. So great call there. And then, lastly but not least, the executive of the year. I am looking at Howie Roseman. Feels like this guy is always in the mix for this award, but like you look at what he did with the Eagles roster. All right. Mm-hmm. So, okay, what are our biggest needs? Okay, secondary. We struggle in secondary. All right, let me just go get Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean in the same draft and just fix it right there. And now their secondary is a strength, just like that, after one draft. Hey, offensively, we have some explosive dynamic playmakers on the outside. Our run game's good with Jalen Hurts, but like we could pair him with someone who could really uplift our offense. Okay, let's go get Saquon. All right, Saquon might be the offensive player of the year, right? And he signed him truthfully at a bargain in free agency is what it looks like now. what do you give him? Like a 13 million annually? Is it 13 to 15 million annually?
I'd say 14, I think, somewhere around there. Something maybe 13 like that. And a half.
I mean, and whether he's playing, he's earning every dollar. You also figure like that offense lost a lot of leadership. With Jason Kelsey retiring, the O-line hasn't lost a step. They brought in Mekhi Becton. He's having a career year at guard. Yeah. Just Howie Roseman, the way he goes about his business, he's always in the mix for this award for a reason, but I think this offseason he had an outstanding offseason between the draft and free agency, fixing whatever holes they might have. And he's got that team sitting at 10-2, competing for a bye, you know, in the playoffs with the Lions. So I think Howie did a great job, deserves the award. And so I'm going Howie Roseman.
Yeah, I almost left this one blank because I agree. But then I also, this is one I always struggle with. I was like, I don't even know exactly how this one works, but I did it in terms of the draft. Like Howie Roseman did great with what they brought in. But I was like, in terms of other teams, I was like, I like the Rams front core that they have. Blake Corum is looking better these last couple of weeks. They're starting to utilize him. And so I went less need. I don't know if I said that yet. And they're really young. They talk about it all the time. If you ever watch a Rams game, it's everything's, they got the youngest team, or like the third youngest team in the whole league, got 16 rookies on the squad, blah, 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 blah. And so like they've had to have more production early on from these dudes, especially in the defensive end. And we've seen the D linemen do well. Just got to bridge the gap with the skill positions. And I don't know. I that's how I looked at it, but I don't think mine's going to be the answer.
I mean, I think the argument you make there is, hey, anytime you have a generational player retire and they replaced him in one draft with Verse and Fisk and got both those dudes. It's very similar to what Howie did with the Eagles. Made a weakness a strength. Within one draft. And then, you know, Corum has been fantastic when he's gotten to play. Cam Kitchens at safety has had a phenomenal year. Jalen McCullough at safety, who was undrafted free agent. Can't remember off the top of my head right now, but he's had a fantastic year. So they have a ton of rookies who are cooking right now on defense specifically. Bo Limmer and Blake Corum have played well on offense as rookies. So I do agree with you. I think there's some merit there to what Snead was able to do in the offseason. The one ding on Les Snead might be the trade of Ernest Jones, the value that they got and losing that guy.
Yeah.
But again, you also look at like Omar Spates, the rookie who's playing pretty well there in that spot. So there's probably a decent argument for Les Snead as well. So I'm not, yeah, you know, I don't hate it for sure. Okay. Now, those are the three-quarter season, 2nd-and-2 NFL awards. Now we got to get to our weekly awards, rolling from week 13 to week 14 here. And we start with the Tukwa Gamer of the Week Award. Jody, who was your gamer?
I went with Bucky Irving this week from the Bucks, ironically enough, Tampa Bay Bucks. He balled out. Literally tooth and nail this game. My dude had 25 carries, 125 yards, one touchdown, three catches, 33 yards. Literally, it went to overtime, right? It was wild. It was back and forth versus the Panthers, if I'm not mistaken. I think he just put on a full-fledged effort. I mean, I guess he got dinged up last week, which, I mean, with that much production in the game, it's definitely bound to happen. So, yeah, we'll hope that he's back this week with the boys tomorrow. But, yeah, in terms of last week, my guy went nutty.
I like it. Okay, let's go to my gamer of the week. I went with Taysom Hill. All right. Now, the stat line, not going to hit you over the top of the head. Yeah. He was 37. He had 5 receptions, 37 yards, 5 carries, 10 yards, a fake punt that he threw for a first down. He didn't complete it, but there was a penalty call that gave them a first down on it. His stats weren't crazy, but he dominated the game on offense for the Saints. Like, where they lined him up dictated what the Rams were doing on defense, how they're motioning him. His blocking for a former quarterback is dang impressive. He blocked like a fullback on a lot of plays, and he was opening holes for Alvin Kamara. He was making it really tough on the Rams. It was very noticeable when he got the injury and went out, which looks like his season's done because they put him on IR with that knee injury, mm-hmm. So prayers up for him. But he was a gamer for the Saints on Sunday when he was able to play. And it was really impressive what he's been able to do and the career role that he's carved out for himself as a multifaceted utility player who is actually very important to the Saints offense. Gamer of the week, Taysom Hill.
Yeah, you never know when you're going to get throwing QB Taysom Hill or, hey, go play tight end Taysom Hill, or, hey, you know what, let's put you at fullback Taysom Hill, or you get all of it in a game. So he's definitely going to be missed right there in Louisiana. Next up, though, we got the Jody's Dog of the Week. This one ties back earlier. You kind of briefly mentioned at the top. I went with Josh Allen. He apparently became the first dude to catch, throw, and run for a touchdown in a game, which is kind of crazy to think about. But the catch.
Snow vibes, too.
Yeah, true, exactly. And I'll say it now. I didn't waver from the Bills -6.5.
Good call. Once I heard Trent Williams was out, I was like, I feel better for you.
But yeah, no, so Josh Allen literally did it all last week. The catch was even more crazy, though. He threw it to the dude. They pulled a Travis Kelce. It was kind of like a hook and ladder to the quarterback. Crazy enough, my dude went flying with the arm sticking out for the tutty. It was a great play. So yeah, Josh Allen.
I know we're not there this week. We're not there yet. But I'm just going to say this week, I'm going the other way on the Niners. They're favorites versus the Bears. Take the Bears. All right. Minor setback for a major comeback. I'm going to go a little more holistic view here and not just look week to week. I'm going to look at the career of one Joe Zay Barose, as they used to call him at Ohio State. Joe Burt, Joe Cool,
Joe Scheisty,
whatever you want to call him. Some of them simply know him as Joe. Burrow was at the top of the mountain very early in his career, right? He nearly won the Super Bowl early on. Last year, he missed most of the year with the injury. This year, he's been incredible, but his defense has let him down too much, which is a big reason why they're sitting at the 4-8 record right now. I just anticipate a strong finish to the season for Burrow, but also an even stronger bounce back in 2025. I don't think that guy is done being heard from in the league as a force, as a guy that you got to show up and play week in and week out. I really hope the Bengals take advantage of what they've got with that guy at that spot, and figure it out defensively moving forward. So I got Joe Burrow, the career of one Joe Burrow. And, you know, maybe from a week-to-week standpoint, look for him to bounce back this week on Sunday.
Yeah, I just think outside of Joe Burrow, they gotta lock in that defense. They got to lock in some of their players for next year because they've been pushing things back, and it's I'm sure that's part of the reason why it's at 4-8 as well, not just other issues while in game. You know what I mean?
Very true. Okay, we got the no cap hats off award. I
don't want to do this again because it's just the media has looked at it ad nauseum for over a week now, and it's just, I mean, put it away. But the Bears finished at the Thanksgiving game. How they don't at least get a field goal attempt out of that situation, everybody already knows about it. It appears to be the primary reason, or at least the last straw, for the firing of Matt Eberflus. But like I said, clears the way for Thomas Brown, who I'm excited to get that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't believe it when I watched it. I think everyone watching at home couldn't believe it when they watched it. So that's got to be the no cap hats off award of the week. It's not. Yeah, I mean, you can't. There's nothing else that you can do. I mean, I thought about the optics of the snow game and the Bills Niners game and the Josh Allen play and all that. But it doesn't beat what happened to the Bears on Thanksgiving.
Or I guess if that's the case, you could also go Black Friday game with the Raiders.
No, I'm not getting into the refs and the Chiefs and all that crap, dude. I'm not doing that with everybody. People got to give that a rest. Give it a rest. All right, Chiefs are good. They find ways to win. I'm sorry. People don't like it, but they do. They just keep finding ways to win.
All right, next up, we got the Strahan Munoz Big Fellow Award. This week, I'm taking it to Washington. I got Cornelius Lucas, number 78 on the Commanders. His pass pro, he's got a nice solid base. He keeps everything on himself. His arms stay moving. He doesn't put the pressure on the defender until, you know, they get in his face. He likes more the, I'm going to stay in your way. You know, like, I'm going to play basketball defense as opposed to being hands-on, turning people and whatnot. So that was cool to see. Deep kick step. As I said, he stays in front of the people, so he's got to be moving with his feet. So he's got great, great footwork. We, in the run game, there was, he had a down block. It was a counter, so the boys came behind his back and deep tutty. I think it was like the third play of the game. Crazy.
Okay.
Brian Robinson went deep on it. And then the only ding I got for him, been a while since I've seen any of these. He had an ineligible man downfield. I kid you not. This dude was guarding the safety when they got the ball. It was hilarious to see. But other than that, it was a good game for my guy. Ironically, they kept him in the whole time. I don't know why. He's a little bit older, and also they were kind of blowing him out, so I don't know why they did that, but
they want to get the guy his reps, dude. Yeah. You never know.
Keep him fresh. Give him on his toes.
All right. On the other side, I'm going Nick Herbig. Everybody got to see the preparation on Hard Knocks, which, by the way, have you watched the in-season Hard Knocks first episode yet?
Mm-mm, no. Who is it? I don't even know.
The AFC North. The whole AFC North. All four teams.
Interesting.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well produced, as always.
Hour episode? 2 hours? Yeah.
Hour?
Oh.
Yeah.
HBO.
Yep. Always HBO well done by anymore. HBO. And the Hard Knocks, all the Hard Knocks content we get, I'm a fan of. But anyway, during the show, a big part of the preparation for the Bengals week for the Steelers was a lot of, we got to get the pressure on Burrow, right? Mike T talking to Herbig all week. Talking to him about, hey, you're going to have that one-on-one matchup with Zeus, their left tackle, Orlando Zeus Brown, right? Hey, you're going to have that matchup with Zeus. You got to beat him one-on-one. You got to beat him one-on-one, right? They were talking about how Highsmith beat him so bad last year. That's why they went shopping for Zeus right? Oh, to get that premier left tackle to protect Joey B. But it's crazy because on the sideline in the game, when that down came up, Mike Tomlin's on the sideline saying, all right, this is Herbig. This has got to be Herbig. This is his one-on-one matchup. This has got to be Herbig versus Zeus. What does he do? Oh. Comes around the corner, strip sack, gets that ball out. Peyton Wilson scoop and score for the win, essentially. I mean, what sealed it? But it was just the preparation that went into it. I think it was awesome for everybody to see. He was ready for the moment. He showed up. And that's a really cool thing to be a part of. I can tell you, when you have coached a, I say kid, in my deal, it's a kid, right?
Yeah.
For that situation, it's grown man. But when you have worked so hard to prepare through the week and you're saying, hey, there's going to be a moment that shows up where you have to make your play. Mm-hmm. And then the moment shows up and you do exactly what you were coached to do and what you talked about and you just manifest the vision of what
I was
going
to say. That goes back to laying down in the room, binging yourself, doing the play. How is it going to look? Blah, blah, blah. All that. That's exactly what came to my mind.
And then it happens. There's no greater feeling. I'm telling you, there's no greater feeling because all the work you put in was correct. And what you said was going to happen, happened. And then watching that player make their play and seeing like their eyes as they come off the field, looking at you like, yeah, you know what I mean? There's like no there's nothing better. And so, but that was also a big play in that game, and Herbig made it when they needed it and really was the play that sealed the game for him. So, I'm going Nick Herbig, Strahan Munoz, Big Fellow Award. Jody, who's cooking?
Ooh, we got a guy who was very reminiscent of the OG man who created this award. We seen it all. We saw a total of 6 touchdowns from this boy. A total of almost like 800 yards passing if you consider those the other touchdowns.
Oh, Lord, I'm just praying he saves me from pick sixes.
Deliver him from pick sixes. Deliver yes, my guy, Jameis Winston in the Broncos game. Like I said, he gave us a full display of cooking. We seen it all. Jameis, the great Jameis, throwing deep bombs, laser focus, throwing dots to throwing a duck into the other team's hands for a touchdown. He gave us 497 passing yards to his own team, 4 touchdowns, along with the 3 picks. Like I mentioned, 2 of them were to the house. Almost a third one at the end of the game. That one made me nervous. I would have lost in fantasy if that happened. I had Will Lutz, and he had the Broncos D. I was up like 4.5-ish. I won by 1 point. Had that been returned for 6, it's over. I lose. It would have been bad. So Jameis, my man, gave us a great display of Jameis /
Russell. I don't care what anybody says. Jameis, I don't care where he's starting.
He's much boss TV.
He's the best thing for the league, bro. Mm-hmm. His content that he puts out, the pregame talks, the in-game, like hilarity of just the chances he's willing to take and some of the plays he makes. Then the post game, like, I'm just praying he delivers me from pick six. Like, dude, he's so funny.
He's unapologetically himself. It's great.
Dude, it's so funny. It's the best thing for the league. He's genuinely Jameis. That's who he is. It's so funny, man. I'm thinking about all his offseason workout videos and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just so funny, bro. I can't. All right. So I'll tell you who wasn't cooking, man. Because it sounds like Jameis was kind of cooking, but not cooking.
He was cooking. He, you know what it was? He cooked a nice meal, but the sides were not there.
Yeah. Kirko didn't cook up anything good. Kirko Chains, wasn't it, on Sunday? He went 24 for 39, 245 yards, 4 picks. Oof. One was a pick six. So a lot of people starting to call for Penix. There's a quiet call for Penix right now.
But the next thing you know, he's the next Russell Wilson. He's going to go somewhere else for cheap. ball out because they're going to have a better line or something. Probably he's able to work his magic. He'll be better healed from his heal. And and then from there, boom, Kirk goes back at the top of the food chain.
Well, we ain't giving up on him in Atlanta yet because he's got his old team coming to town, or he's going to their
he's
town.
He's going to theirs. Week. Yeah, he's going back
and
to home.
He's got a rebound. He's got a rebound this week. All right. If he doesn't play well this week, they could go to Penix. If he does not play well this week,
mm-hmm.
I could see him going to Penix for the last four games. But we'll see what he does. But yeah, Kirko chains, it wasn't good, man. He was cooking up like that.
He was like, cooking up his chains. He had to give them back, bro.
He was cooking up that hamburger helper. Not good.
Hey, don't hate on hamburger helper. That got me through some times, my guy.
Hey, bro. I'm just saying, the hamburger helper ain't it. I'm just saying. I'll take anything else. I'll take the mac and cheese or something, or ramen. Don't give me the hamburger helper.
Oh, ramen? Over yeah, hamburger?
Yeah. Give me the ramen, bro.
Which hamburger helper are you getting?
I don't even remember, bro. I just don't.
You gotta
like
get it. The one. You gotta get the ones with the bow tie. That's the one.
Okay. Well, he said the bow tie.
The bow tie noodles.
Who's the Boo Boo Evans Award winner?
This week we went Darius Slayton. This is tragic. 2 catches on 6 targets and only had 8 yards. I know I said it earlier in the year. I'm going to say it again. I could probably do that. If I had 6 chances to get the ball at receiver, I think I could get 8 yards. Granted, I got
zero.
I'm not going to catch any.
Yeah.
You don't think I get a reception?
Yeah, I don't think you create any separation and get open at all, bro.
That's the thing. You don't expect me to, and then I do. I'm getting the first down. I'm telling you right now, I'm running in and out. I'm hitting a quick slant and shoop, going back the other way.
Said I'm running it in and out. I'm running the in and out. Oh my
yes,
God.
Bro. I'm telling you. I done cooked dudes. Granted, the speed is going to be a huge factor on this one. But I've cooked dudes myself in intramurals with that exact route.
Intramurals, my man brought up the intramurals for the NFL. Look at my intramural tape, NFL. Okay.
I was a dog. You know what I would do? I was a dog. I would snap the ball, hit the quick blocks for, you know, the 5 seconds, whatever the rule was. Boom. Turn around. I was like Travis Kelce this year. Turn around, get the ball, and run for the rest.
It's crazy because we're about to go to the turnover on downs, and what you just described, Trey McBride just did it for the Cardinals against.
Sounds like I can do it.
Okay. So turnover on downs, everybody's favorite.
Make sure segment. You tune in on YouTube for this segment. A lot better. Over
Turn
there.
In on YouTube so you can learn a little football today. Get learned, get educated. All right.
Is that what the kids say?
That's what the kids say. Last week, we talked about, again, the trends, offense versus defense, right? So offense, we're throwing vertical bombs. Defense, we're going to go 2 high safety looks. Offense, we're going to run the ball a little bit. Defense, okay, we'll kind of try and keep our 2 high shell, at least show it anyway. And then we're going to get into a 5-man front and stop the run. Okay, well, that's what we saw last week. We had those motion offenses who are motioning into blockers and creating a lot of gaps in the run game. We saw that earlier in the year. Then we saw a defense adjust with that 5-man front, really loading the box up a little bit more, playing that kind of 5-2 look, even though they're keeping 2 high safeties behind it. Okay, well, here we go. What do offenses counter back with? All right. And football, just what is old is new again. It goes in a circular motion, right? So we watch here. This is Cardinals Vikings kind of early in the game. The Cardinals are in a 2 tight end set, right? The Vikings are going to stem their front, meaning they're going to kind of pre-snap, move their front. They're going to show a little bit of one front, then move it. Van Ginkle's going to move them and come walk up on the edge here. And you're going to see that the Cardinals are going to show what looks to be a GH counter, right? And then run the little play action boot off of that. All right. So let's see what we got here. Okay. There's the stem by the Vikings. Now you're getting that motion by the H. Here it comes. Looks like GH counter. You see it, Jody? guard, age, kick, wrap. Okay. You've got that thick box. They're actually showing too high, but now Harrison Smith is coming back down into the box and it's actually getting to a one high safety look, right? So it looks like it's that GH. What does that do to the safety's eyes? It attracts him, right? Meanwhile, Trey McBride is slipping to the flat and this becomes a 10-yard gain. Okay. So again, defenses are going to limit explosives. Say it again.
Was that robber? Yeah, that's my guess, but I don't know. The defense.
So it was cover three. It was just cover three, but Smith was showing a too high look and he drops down to become the flat defender late. Now, the devil's in the details here, right? So I want you to watch Trey McBride. Okay. Watch what he does right here to Van Ginkle. It's really, really good stuff. Okay, so again, what really sells this? Harrison Smith's got a tight end read, right? He's the flat defender, but he's also the extra box player. So he's looking and it looks like, okay, blocking backside. I'm getting my eyes around. All right, GH counter is what it looks like. I got to fit the backside run through lane, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he has a fit there. Now, did you see what Trey McBride does to Van Ginkle? He's like, I'm going to block you. I'm going to block you. And then I'm going to use your momentum against you, toss you down.
Yeah.
Right. As Kyler Murray's hitting the boot, and the timing of all of that has to be 100% perfect. Because if he does it too early, Van Ginkle hits
on him.
Kyler before he ever gets out of the boot, right? If he does it too late, the front side pressure can get to Kyler. It has to be perfectly timed. And he has to do it exactly like that, where he puts Van Ginkle down, like puts his head into the ground, right? To get him off so that he can't throws off his rush to Kyler Murray, right? And then Kyler Murray's got to trust, I'm going to get this ball out before Van Ginkle can get to me. All of it well executed, but truthfully, Trey McBride is what made that play work with the technique he used there to get himself open. And then it was a great counter for the Cardinals with that, you know, loaded box, what ended up becoming an eight-man box, right? Five-man front, two backers,
especially with the third, look of run.
Third dude dropping down into it with cover three. It's a great counter by offense. So you just see the ebbs and flows, right? We it's kind of fun because we've seen how offenses and defenses have developed and countered each other throughout the season. And it's all the teams in the league, right? It's not been one team. We've been going and bouncing around the league with this to see this kind of game that's evolved all throughout the season. I think it's a ton of fun when you're seeing it week to week to week. Defenses will have a counter next week, right? I'm sure I'll be watching and I'll see something that will say, hey, this is it. This is the segment right here. So I'm excited for it. Look for it this week when you're watching football.
No doubt. The second down on this turnover on downs, I already mentioned it at the top. Wasn't in panic mode when Trev said, I don't think you should take that pick. We rolled with it. Worked out in our favor. I think that's the second time this year. I don't want to just say it. Anyways, this week, the picks I'm looking at. We got the Panthers plus 13 versus Philly. Now, don't get me wrong. Philly's been very, very dominant. But the Panthers, they've been making moves. Bryce Young.
13's way too high, bro. Way too high of a line. I like it. I like it.
That's what I'm saying. And they've been playing everyone close. They played the Bucks. The Bucks, they normally beat Philly. I'm going to just say that right now. The Bucks game, they lost by a field goal. I think that game was at like 6.5 or something. I don't remember. But we're on it. I think the Panthers are in a good stride right now, playing well. They got Adam Thielen back like a week ago. Everything's working out well. I think, like Trevor said, it's a lot of points. And Philly,
a lot of points.
They're due for a mess up somewhere down here. Sirianni, Baldiani, whatever they're calling them. It's getting tough. It's getting to that time where, you know, they're on that climb. You're on the roller coaster. Get to the top. Arms go up. So we'll see what happens. But I think 13 is a lot of points. Next up, we got the Bills in L.A. 3.5. This seems like a what does Vegas know game to me. You know what I mean? I think the Bills should go in there, light them up. Like some sort of wildfire. I think the Bills are far beyond the Rams right now. Granted, we love the Rams. We got That right there, you got that over there. You know what I mean? This is a Rams positive podcast, but if we're speaking truthfully, Josh Allen compared to our guy Matt Stafford right now, different levels. We've seen it in the tiers. How many levels difference? One or two? One? That's what I'm saying. Different ball games they're playing right now. Only thing I will say with the Bills, they got to travel. 3-hour difference. But it's still a late game. So I don't think that's anything they're not used to. So 3.5 seems way too low at this moment in time. And you called this one earlier. I thought I had what you said with the Bears winning. But I got Bears Niners over 44.5. I think that the Bears are going to light them up, honestly. And the Niners either got to keep it close or it's a runaway with the Bears and everyone's like, whoa, the Bears are good. What's going on here? And then on the flip side, it's like the Niners are falling apart. Shanahan can't do it no more. So my answer, Bills minus 3.5. Like I said, what does Vegas know? I don't know, but I'm countering them.
Fishy. It's fishy. I don't like it.
Yeah.
My favorite one is the Panthers. Panthers getting 13. There's no way.
Beyond me.
I like the Panthers this week. I'm with you. I like the Panthers getting 13. I also like the Bears getting points at least earlier in the week. I thought I saw them getting like 5 points. I'm like, dude, give me the Bears. Like, what's that line at right now? Because, you know, depending on what that's at, you know, I might even like the Bears money line to go to San Francisco and win.
I'll run that for funsies after the show. But right now, the Bears game is sitting at bum 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 bum. Where is it?
Do 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 do.
Hey, you caught that? Oh, it's right here. 3.5. So 150 plus 150 for the money line.
See, I like the Bears at the very least on the spread.
It went down to 44. You get that? You could push now.
Okay. Okay. All right. I'm going to go to the third down breakdown. Let's hit it. So we've been talking about our guy, Bryce Young, has been playing much better recently. Yeah. And we're going to show you how and why, okay, on this third down breakdown. Yeah, now, I know the Bucks. It does. I know the Bucks beat the Panthers. However, I wanted to look at, how did the Panthers put themselves in the position to potentially win that game? It looked like they had it won until the Bucs kicked that field goal to force overtime. And then even in overtime, it looked like they were going to go down and win the game until Chuba Hubbard fumbled. So Bryce Young was playing well enough to win. His teammates let him down just a little bit, the defense, and then Hubbard. But Bryce Young playing well. So this is a red zone snap, third and goal from the 10. The Panthers go empty, which, to me, if you're going empty on third and 10, shows that you have a ton of confidence in your quarterback. You're trying to give him the clean reads, right, and mm-hmm. let him process and get the ball out. You're also trusting your O-line a little bit. The Bucs are going to show a simulated pressure, meaning they're showing a five-man front with like a little overload look over here.
Yeah.
But they're actually going to drop one out. They're going to play cover three with the hook defenders leaning to the three receiver side over here. And with your end man on the line of scrimmage over here is going to bail back into being the weak side hook defender. All right. Bryce Young, he's going to process. It's actually a good coverage for what they're running, right? There's a flat defender who runs to the out route up top. You've got a third corner who's going to be able to cover the fade route. The little shake route is going to run through the zone of the hook defender who's going to bump him. And then you might have a window to throw there between the corner and the safety, but it's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. And it's a late route. Okay. The backside post is going to run to that middle of the field player. It's going to be bumped on his way by the flat defender who's going to sink underneath with a corner over the top of the fade ball backside. All right. So the only route that might come open here is that little shake route, but you got to wait on it. All right. So Bryce does a really good job of processing all this information fairly quickly. All right, watch him. He's getting through his reads. He likes the backside. He's thinking, okay, can I make that throw? No, I see that middle of the field safety. Don't like it.
God, I'm looking, okay, though.
Let me look over. Okay, I've got a flat defender. Oh, do I like the shake route? maybe that middle of the field player, like I need to let this go right here. I don't like it, right? Doesn't have enough juice on it. Let me just take off.
All right. I thought he was going to fit that window.
And he gets to the pylon and scores a touchdown. And arguably he could have made that throw, like I said, on the shake route.
Yeah.
It was going to be a tight window if he put it to the back part of the end zone. He didn't like it, though, and it takes him by the time he gets there, right there, right? He just didn't – he's getting – feeling a little bit of pressure, so he escapes – retreats first, but then gets back up through the middle of the pocket, then escapes to the sideline and has the juice to get into the end zone right there. Mm-hmm. I like how he's playing, man. I think he's playing good ball. He's processing quicker and better. Again, could I argue that he could have made that throw on the shake route? Yes, but I also like that – I mean, he turned that play into a positive. Obviously, he scored, right?
Yeah,
so,
true.
Even when you may have complaints right now, he's making positive plays. And that's
Canales
much different than earlier in his career. Now.
Learning some things.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Fourth down on the turnover on downs is our bad beat. This week, if we take it back to the Browns-Broncos game, our guy Jameis driving the field, two-minute drill, throws a pick six. Early on in that drive, the line was sitting at six for the game. So if you had the Browns plus six, you were down. The finish is at 11 points. Or 9 points, sorry. So you take off seven from the Broncos. You have the potential to go down and win with the Jameis going down the field, getting the touch and getting in the end zone. But instead, you get a negative seven going the other way. And then as he starts driving the field again, throws another pick near in the red zone that went for another like 60 yards down the backside. So yeah, if you had the Browns on this game, you were definitely sweating like crazy the last quarter, because it was just back and forth. And then Jameis ending the game with two picks in the span of like 3 minutes or something. All bad.
All right. Yeah, that's bad beats, man. Bad beats. So earlier in the show, we said that we would talk about maybe some of the tougher playoff matchups for our contenders, right? And by contenders, I think there's two in each conference that are obvious. And then there's some that you might be able to argue for, right? So the Chiefs, the Bills, the Lions, and the Eagles are the, no doubt, bona fide contenders right now. Agreed, Jody?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no doubt.
I think you can make a case for the Steelers and the Ravens in the AFC. Despite the Ravens having some struggles, I think you can still make a case for both those teams.
Yeah.
And then you can make a case for the Packers and the NFC. Feels like that's kind of your extended contender tier right there. Seven teams, all right? So for each of those seven teams, we're going to go through what might be the one matchup that they don't want to see in like the wild card or divisional round early on.
Super wild card again.
That could give them some trouble, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does anybody want to see the Chiefs in the AFC? No, I could make the Chiefs like the team nobody wants to see, right? But what I'm saying is, who's the kind of wild card matchup they could draw early in the playoffs that could give them trouble, and we could see one of these contenders fall early, right?
Yeah.
So these are some fun hypotheticals, some things to think about, some matchups that if you're fans of these teams, you maybe don't want to see, all right? So we'll start with the Chiefs. Well, what do the Chiefs not want to see? They don't want to see a team with great pass rush, with great playmaking on defense, and then a streaky offense that can hit vertical shots, hit big plays.
Yeah.
Because the Chiefs don't hit those big plays right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what team is that describing? Even though they're kind of technically in this fringe contender tier, I still think it could be a team that the Chiefs could see in the divisional round based on how things finish out this season. But that's the Steelers. I don't think the Chiefs want to play the Steelers in a playoff game right now.
I'll get you.
I think that's the team that they don't want to see truthfully, I don't think they would want to see them in the AFC title game. I don't think they want to see them in the divisional round. I don't think that's the team, if you're the Chiefs, that you want to have to play, because I think that defense can get after Mahomes with the tackles they have right now, could create a ton of turnovers and make it really tough on him. Mm-hmm. And then offensively, are they going to be uber productive all the time? No, but they're so streaky. All it takes is Russ to hit that one moon ball to George Pickens, and all of a sudden you're down. And with that defense, I just think it's a tough ask. So I think of all the teams, all the AFC opponents that they could see kind of early on, I think the Steelers fit the bill of the team they don't want to see.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the Bills fit that mold, or is their defense a little different, which is the main difference between the two?
I mean, obviously, like for the Bills and Chiefs, I could say you don't want to see that team, right? But that we're guessing that's the AFC title game, right?
Yeah, okay, yeah, I get you.
Now, the Bills' defense is different. The Bills' defense is really good at stopping the run. They're an elite run-stopping defense right now. They don't have the same horses up front to rush the passer that the Steelers do. Now, they can get after you, but it's just not the same, not in the same way. They don't have the same playmakers. I think that's what separates the Steelers' defense from every other defense, which is why during the preseason rankings, I said the Steelers had the best defense in the NFL because they have so many playmakers, from T.J. Watt to Minka Fitzpatrick in the back end. I mean, and everyone in between. It's just a playmaking defense, dude. They don't just like get stops. They create takeaways, touchdowns. They create points.
Yeah, I get you.
And I don't think the Chiefs want to see that. All right, so to the Bills. The Bills don't want to see a team that can stifle Josh Allen on defense, giving him different looks, mixing in coverages, giving him fire zones, bringing different pressures, putting heat on him while also being in a matchup on the back end, and then also have the ability to control the ball in offense and keep the ball away from Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. Who is that describing? That's the Chargers. The Bills don't want to see the Chargers. That's the team they don't want to see. Because Harbaugh and Jesse Minter, I think, are a duo that can put together an elite defensive game plan that could limit Josh Allen, but they also would play complementary football and offense and run the heck out of the ball to keep the ball away from Josh Allen. And then Justin Herbert's not a slouch. That guy can make plays.
He can sling it.
When they'll need him to, and he could go toe-to-toe with Josh Allen at the end of a game when the Chargers have done what they need to do to keep it a game, and then put it on Herbert's arm to go win it for him.
I don't think the Bills want to see recently. That.
Hey, I don't think the Bills want to see
that. And getting him working his arm a little more, especially now that JK's hurt. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure they could start leaning that way, and we're going to see a whole different Chargers teams that we haven't seen throughout the year so far.
Okay. On to the Steelers. All right, so this is kind of that fringy tier in the AFC here.
Mm-hmm.
The Steelers, all right, if we're talking about like what could be their wild card matchup could potentially be, I don't think they want to see a team with a quarterback that can extend plays because their pass rush is so good. You don't want to see that guy who can, okay, well, the initial pass rush is good, but he extended it, right? Yeah. He's able to make a play outside the pocket while also being able to have the ability to stop their passing game, right? Again, we said their offense isn't a consistent ball control, move the ball down on you off. They're kind of a quick strike offense. They're more explosive,
a
little streaky. They have moments where they'll go three and out, that kind of thing, throw a turnover. We saw Russ throw a pick six against Cincy, that kind of thing. So they're not prone to or they're not avoidant of mistakes offensively. And a team that could take advantage of all of that, to me, is the Broncos. That Broncos defense is built to stop really any offense in the AFC, but especially that Steeler offense. And then Bo Nix, his legs would be huge in a game in that capacity, just with his ability to extend plays. I think that's a matchup that if you're the Steelers, you don't want to see. You don't want to see the Broncos slide. If you're going to stay as that three seed, you don't want to see the Broncos slide up to the six line and have to see the Broncos in a wild card game. That's not a matchup that I think is the best one for the Steelers.
I guess on that game, the positive would be they're at home and you got a rookie quarterback going into your territory first time. You know what I mean? Got the towels rolling.
Yes, that would be a massive challenge for Bo Nix and Sean Payton, no doubt. But I would also anticipate that Broncos defense would keep them in the game.
That is true. I could see that.
Okay, the Ravens. They just don't want to see a team who can stop their run game and sit in zone coverage all day. A team that could confuse, you know, give them confusing looks, who can take advantage of what they've done in terms of the secondary where they're a little bit weaker. It's the Steelers.
Yeah.
That the Ravens, I can guarantee you, do not want to have to play the Steelers a third time.
Third
time,
yeah.
They haven't even played them the second time yet this year, I believe. They played them in Pittsburgh, I think, and they still have to play in Baltimore. I don't think Baltimore wants to have to see them a third time. So however it works out, whether they win the division or lose it, I think they want to be seated away from the Steelers and not have to see them until a potential AFC championship, if that's what it happened, came down to. But they don't want to see them early. I think that's a team that Mike Tomlin understands how to play Lamar Jackson, how to coach against that. And they've had a ton of success against Lamar. So I think if you're the Ravens, you do not want to see the Steelers.
Yeah, all right. Makes perfect sense. And especially, like you said, you don't want to see them a third time. They already struggled the first time. Second time is still yet to play out. But also, you got to deal with the same divisional opponent you've seen for the last, 5 years, I think. Lamar's been in the league, and it's like, it's always tough over there when that happens. So it's definitely one you want to stay away from.
Okay. On to the NFC. Start with the Lions. What has been the way that defenses have historically made Jared Goff struggle? By generating pressure, by disguising their looks, ton of fire zones, ton of pressures, ton of blitzes. Yes, if you get pressure with four, it's even better. Simulated pressures, all of that. Who's better in the NFC at that than Brian Flores? Because if there is, I'd like to know who it is, right? I don't think the Lions want to see the Vikings defense as long as they stay healthy. Jared Goff, like I said, struggled through his career against Brian Flores. Sam Darnold and the Vikings offense, I think, have just enough juice to score against that depleted Lions defense. So if it happens like round two, the divisional round, if the Lions end up keeping the bye and they got to see the Vikings in round two, or let's say they drop down to the 2 seed and they got to see the Vikings as a 7 seed, I don't think it's what you want if you're a Lions fan. Similar to what I said about the Ravens. No, they've played once. They got to play the second time in Detroit. They played in Minnesota. That was a very competitive game. Minnesota was dominating for a good chunk of the game, and Detroit kind of came back and got them. But Minnesota, I think, will have an opportunity to get a win in Detroit if they play it right.
Good old dumb game.
We'll see. You know, again, I don't think Detroit would want to see that matchup a third time in the playoffs. All right, on to the Eagles. Someone's got to stop the Eagles' run game.
For real.
No one's done it yet. That's the thing. No one's really stopped them and made them one-dimensional throwing the football. The Packers have a top 10 rush defense and yards per carry. They have Jair Alexander, who can play on an island on A.J. Brown. They have Xavier McKinney in the middle of the field, who I think is the defensive player of the year. This was a fantastic week one game in Brazil. It was really weird. A lot of stuff going on. It opened the NFL season. But I could see it being a really fun playoff matchup. I don't think the team the Eagles want to see early on is the Packers. I think that's the team they don't want to see if they can avoid it, at least until an NFC championship. So Jordan Love, those playmakers on offense, they do enough that in the run game that I think it could give the Eagles defense some fits too.
Yeah, that would be a fun one, running back, especially that all the growth you can see from that first game all the way to now be immense. But I have something off topic I just want to bring up. Every time you say this is something they're not going to want to see, it just reminds me of some Drake bar where he said, this is going to be something you don't want to see. Just running through my head right now. They ain't ready for it.
Oh, good stuff. Good times. That reminds me of the good old days. It's like high school level, high school era Drake. Okay. Last but not least of this contenders list, we've got the Packers. The Packers make their money by staying on schedule in the run game and giving Jordan Love easy throws off play action. Mm-hmm. There's not as good in the drop back game because you can get pressure on Love. There's a very young and hungry front in Los Angeles that has grown by leaps and bounds since they played the Packers early on in the season. And even then, they forced Jordan Love into a pick six early on in the season. And their offense was not up to the task during that game. But now it's healthy. I think also you get into the playoffs, beware of Stafford's playmaking in big games. I think the team the Packers don't want to see, if they can manage to get in, is the Rams. I think if you're the Packers, you don't want to have to play that Rams team again. You got out of Los Angeles with a win earlier in the season. Again, no Cooper Kupp, no Puka Nacua.
Yeah.
Offensive line banged up. Stafford kind of trying to figure some stuff out. That young D-line playing, remember early in the season, they had some growing pains. They played well. Mm-hmm. They got pressures. They didn't finish. Now they're starting to finish more. It's a little bit different defense. The dynamic has changed. And then offensively, completely different, right? So, and that was a good game in, I think it was week five, I want to say. So, you know, I'm just saying, that's not a team that I think the Packers won't have to play again if that's what it turns out to be. You know, if the Packers are the 5 seed, Rams, if they get in, they're probably a 4 seed, right?
True.
Be a 4-5 matchup. I don't think the Packers won't have to go back to Los Angeles. So, that does that, you know, for the kind of early round matchups that all of these contenders don't want to see, because one of these, we have 7 teams here. One of those 7 is likely to lose on wild card weekend to somebody,
mm-hmm.
right?
Who's most likely?
Well, I think you assume the Chiefs and the Lions are going to get the bye right now, even though the Eagles and the Bills are right there. If I had to take a stab at somebody right now, my best guess would be the Ravens.
Mm-hmm. Assuming they play the Steelers or just in general?
Yes. Assuming that they end up having to play the Steelers because they lose the division and they got to go to Pittsburgh. I think that's just a really tough matchup for Baltimore. But also, I think Baltimore's just got some – they're struggling with some identity issues right now, right? Like their kicker's not making kicks. And Lamar's making plays. Lamar's playing well, but offensively they're not running the ball as well as they were earlier in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, they're still struggling in the secondary. You know, so there's just a lot of things for Baltimore to figure out. More things, I think, right now than anyone else on this list. I was really on Baltimore before the season as a Super Bowl contender.
So,
you know, there's still that part of me that hopes they figure it out and finish the season the right way. They've got a bye week this week, I believe. So that may help them. They get a bye and then they go down to the stretch of the last 4 games. Maybe they figure it out. But right now, if I had to take a guess at who loses on wildcard weekend of those 7, obviously 2 of the 7 will have a bye. Yeah. So then there's 5 left. I think Baltimore.
I was going to say the safe answer is one of them too, just because we're assuming they're playing each other. But I would like to poke fun at Philly and say they probably do it again where they go to the playoffs and take the L. Because we've seen it last year. They played, the Bucks. Now, if they play the Packers, great game that we talked about having to see the growth over the whole season. But luckily, I guess, the Eagles would have the home game at the link at that point. But
more than likely, yeah.
Yeah,
more
so than likely. I don't know. We'll see. That'd be a fun matchup to root against the Eagles, too.
All right, we got to finish out the week with the banger of the week. What you got, Joe?
All right, so I mentioned this last year. It's a whole new season this year. I'm watching Surviving Barstool again. It's back. They brought in 24 contestants this year compared to, 12 last year. It was a lot smaller. And It's just, so they put out the first three episodes this week. Locked in on that. There's one dude, hilarious. I guess his name's Gilly. Don't know what show he's from, but it's this dude that all he does is get on the show, get really high, go to the event, talk smack, and then he just jokes the whole time. And no spoilers, but they were favorable in the first couple, had a downfall, and this dude just assumed he was gone because he has no ties to nobody. He's just a lone ranger out here making his time here, just getting high, like I said. And it's the fun. I would literally watch the show just for him. As long as he's there, I would have a great time just seeing what he does on each episode, because he is hilarious. And then, I would check that out. If you want something a little different outside of that scope, if you're not into, you know, Barstool personalities, I've been watching Lioness. I think it's on Paramount, if I'm not mistaken. I've seen the first three episodes. I believe there's a total of three seasons at this point, but they are fun to watch. It's funny how I could go and watch Surviving Barstool for an hour a day, but not having the willpower to go and watch Lioness for an hour a day. I just feel like, I don't know, one of them's a lot more entertaining than the other. Like, the other one, you got to focus. One of them, you could like put in the background and just pay attention for a solid like 10 minutes. You'll laugh. You know what I mean? But those are a couple of things to check out if you're looking for something new.
Okay. I was looking up the Surviving Barstool. Never heard of it until you brought it up. So, I think that is a jam-packed, awesome episode for you. I hope everyone's enjoying the downstretch of football here, and excited to see what they say in the college football playoff rankings tomorrow. Excited to watch some NFL football, big games, go Rams. And on that note, take us out, Ray. Been going on for way too long. System in place is way too wrong. Tell me how you feel if a cop came around, put your son to the ground and he choke him till he can't breathe. Or better yet, break into your house and he shoot you on your couch cause he's scared and he couldn't see. Or going on a jog outside and he put that AR to your chest and he fired. Matter of fact, tell me how you feel if your son wore a hoodie when outside got killed. This the main thing I want you to hear. The reason they be killing all my people cause of fear. Cops see a black man shoot him. White man kill 100 people, they subdue them. Freedom. I'ma raise my hand, my fists in the air, I stand my ground like freedom. You can't kill my soul, my brother on the floor, can't breathe, let him go like freedom. My brother and sister fighting to be alive, every day we scream out freedom. Around a cow, one knee, mean two different things, we just wanna be free. You have the right to remain silent, anything you say, it don't matter cause you black. You already guilty as a matter of fact, make one move, you ain't never going back. Trigger gladly, black man down, look, your honor, I saw it, I saw him reaching for his 9mm wallet, 38 caliber inhaler in the back seat, so I called for backup when we ran it like a track meet, had a couple unpaid tickets in the past, so I pulled up on him and I had to shoot his ass, I don't need taser, Glock what I draw, unless you got a badge, then you not above the law, system in my favor, black boy, you the opposite, I drive you to the station and think about what to charge you with, speaking to the coach of the community in peril, got us all thinking like crabs in a barrel, war going on, but we fighting on each other. We cannot afford to be killing all our brothers. We gon' need every single soldier in this battle. About to go left, let me tell you why I have to. Really, it's a trip, this is what I gotta do. So I'ma say it one time and I'm saying it for you. This is
is for the people looking at me so confused. Wonder why I say and I act the way I do. Why he saying we? Why he talking like he black? Why he talking like he know the struggle, this and that? I swear I hear it all, so I'm finally addressing. I'm white and I'm black. This is my confession. Hate I gotta waste time answering that question. Fists in the air, represent God's blessing.
Freedom!
Yeah, freedom! We just wanna be free.